you're known for getting very deep into characters, and that takes such a huge discipline. How important was sports in terms of the influence of the discipline on you with your acting career?
I grew up playing everything from rugby, football, baseball, volleyball, bike races, and boxing. I tried martial arts. Loved to ride horses, and the youngest of three brothers, so it was a fiercely competitive family. And so when it came to the opportunity to play Roger Maris in 61, that was just a dream come true. And with Roger batting on the opposite side of the plate as me, I had to learn from scratch.
But also within the research of each character, and to become a really good athlete, repetition is so important. Mm-hmm. And if you're playing basketball, you've got to be on the driveway till all hours of the night until you can't see the ball anymore. Acting is very similar in the sense of discipline.
Yeah, we spent probably, at least on that film, several months before principal photography, just in baseball boot camp with Reggie Smith, the great switch hitter for the Dodgers. He put us through our paces, both Thomas and I, until we were completely blistered and battered and bruised. And that really helps you immerse into that world. I mean, that's all you do is you eat, sleep, and drink baseball. And then the same with the NASCAR film. I went to race school at Lowe's Motor Speedway, and each of them are remarkable experiences in that you do get so deeply involved in it. I knew nothing about NASCAR when I first took on the project, and yet you come out the other side of it very deeply steeped in the sport and enjoying it, actually.
It's interesting because you're talking about 61 and 3, which are so embedded in American culture, and you've done so many different films that separate the myth from the reality of the American story, whether it's Saving Private Ryan, 3, 61, where you told just how big of a toll it took on Roger Maris, Flags of Our Fathers, and now Casino Jack. Yet you grew up in Canada before you set sail.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a dual citizen.
A couple years ago, right?
That's right, yeah. Oh, wow, you've got your homework. But that's right, I grew up on Vancouver Island.
Were you fascinated by the American story as a kid?
I mean, well, you know what's funny? As a kid, I was always a Yankees fan. So go figure. I mean, we didn't have a Major League Baseball team. My brother was a Yankees fan, and I grew up just sort of emulating him. Although I think that the Pacific Northwest, primarily Vancouver, is so sort of influenced by what happens in Hollywood. And that's really sort of where I cut my teeth in the business, because of that overflow of work that came up from California into Vancouver and all of the series and films that we're shooting there, American film and television. It's really what's predominantly on television and in the theaters in Canada. So it's really unavoidable in terms of pop culture, fashion. It's sort of intrinsically connected.
What was your exposure to politics before doing Casino Jack?
It would have been We Were Soldiers. I played Joe Galloway, who's the first civilian to be ever awarded a Bronze Star in combat. He was a photojournalist in Vietnam and subsequently became a speechwriter for Colin Powell and was very involved in politics in Washington. And anyway, he was the one that really introduced me to the state of things in Washington, because we became very close friends. And then a few of my films, I would get invited to Vietnam vet memorials and veterans' anniversaries and bases around the country and West Point, and you'd meet with soldiers and veterans. And the more time that I spent in Washington, the more involved I got in seeing it through the eyes of someone like Joe, who was so intimately involved and really had such inside connections. You got a very unvarnished view.
Before doing Casino Jack, what was your view, especially in talking to him and seeing DC that way?
The only reason that I involved myself in Casino Jack was because of what it ultimately said as a film. It was a cautionary tale to the public about what is currently the state of affairs in Washington, that our democracy is drowning under a tsunami of corporate financing and, you know, a mountain of cash that influences our political process and has irrevocably changed it forever, in my opinion. And even all of the beating of drums that took place during this scandal when it broke by John McCain and others, nothing changed. There was no Lobbying Reform Act with any teeth. In fact, it's probably worse than it ever was. Material equality and liberty are intrinsically connected, and you can't have an honest, true democracy without equal representation. You know, and you see in the recent midterm elections, record numbers of millions spent on these campaigns, $50-100 million of personal wealth and probably corporate wealth wagered on these elected positions, and you and I can't be equally represented if we don't have that kind of cash to get in the race. It's just ballooned so far out of control that I think until people become aware of it, and hopefully through a film like this, they can be made aware of it and exercise their First Amendment right use their voice, hold their elected officials' feet to the fire, and understand that that is the truest form of democracy is dissension, and that that's not only their right, it's a privilege, you know. People are tired at the end of a 10, 12-hour workday, raising their kids and living their life that most people in these high-level elected positions feel like they can really get away with whatever they want because the public just doesn't have enough time in the day to keep tabs on them.
I wasn't going to ask you this question, but hearing you talk about it, you're a concerned citizen, would you ever consider running for office?
I don't know. I think it would only be out of sheer desperation. You know, I felt like I could be of service in some way, absolutely. I think it would be every citizen's responsibility and also privilege to serve, but boy, it would be a very, I think, frustrating town to work in. You know, it's much like my business, you know, it's mostly theater. It's mostly pageantry. I mean, how else can you explain Sarah Palin? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
John Stewart said the difference between Hollywood and DC is that the people in Hollywood, and I'll clean up the language, are jerks who think they have power. The people in D.C. are jerks who actually do.
Yeah, that's very true. That's great. Is that an original quote of his?
Yeah.
That's good.
Speaking of politics, you're going to be playing Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah, I just finished that.
Did you talk to the Kennedys?
No, I didn't. There was a little bit of difficulty going into the project because the keepers of the Kennedy flame, if you will, were very concerned that the image of Camelot might be eroded and that I think early drafts of the script might have given them an illusion that it was more of a salacious piece than it really was, but it couldn't have been more opposite. It was such an incredible experience for me. But no, I stuck to just my own research. I read every book that has been written on the Kennedys and listened to every phone call between Jack and Bobby and every speech that Bobby gave and really just lived with him for 5 months that I was involved in the project, basically in my earphones, just listening to his speeches over and over and over and over again. Everything that I could find, I compiled digitally, and he just lived with me in my ears all day long. But the books were incredible. There's such a vast array of books out there on the Kennedys, as you can well imagine.
Yeah.
But you know, specifically Bobby, and then I read every book that he highlighted in his books as being books that were an influence on him. Like when Jack was assassinated, Jack gave Bobby a book called The Greek Way by Edith Hamilton, and that was a very, very important book to him, to both of them, really. And it's what it was one of the keys to his healing some of his suffering and confusion at the time. And then I read, you know, other books that were somewhat more controversial, like Jackie and Bobby, about their relationship. And then, of course, you read other books that are also somewhat controversial by Seymour Hersh, The Dark Side of Camelot. Then you read all the other ones that are considered to be the foremost authorities on the Kennedys and the ones that are kind of more mainstream. And so I really covered my bases in terms of research. And the History Channel also just compiled a tremendous amount of documentaries and just real footage and material for us to wade through. So it was a mountain of research that was just ongoing throughout the entire production. It really just never ended. I thoroughly enjoyed that, but I hope to meet them. You know, even playing Roger Maris, the family was quite hesitant about being involved with HBO.
Private.
Very, very private. And then, after the film came out, they welcomed me with open arms. We screened the film at the White House together, and they just loved it. They were very grateful of the care and the sensitivity that HBO took to represent their father and husband, or Roger, I should say. And I became dear friends of their family, and with Casino Jack, I wasn't able to meet Mike because he was excused himself from Washington.
I'd imagine so.
And he was actively cooperating with the investigation, so it wasn't available to me. But I was able to speak to his friends and colleagues and coworkers and was given a tremendous amount of information that I would have never been able to get from books and articles.
Have you heard through friends of Scanlon what he thought about the film being made? Have you heard like what his reaction was at all?
No, we haven't, but Kevin got to speak at length with Jack in prison, and so that was quite informative. Like I say, all of my information came through friends and coworkers and colleagues that had worked in Mike's office. Such an interesting personality, such a schismatic personality, in the sense that he's holding down this $10 an hour lifeguard job through the entire time that he's making millions as a PR consultant and lobbyist with Jack Abramoff.
And for a smart guy making the dumbest decisions.
Incredible. But he was this truly pure surfer dude. That really was the life closest to his true self, was this surfer dude living the life as this lifeguard on the beach, and yet all the while he was in Washington, he was a completely different guy. You know,
well, it makes actually perfect sense if he's a surfer that he was riding that wave. I mean, and I'm not saying that in a pun kind of way, but literally, as this thing is cresting, he's going, let me see where it takes me.
It was like a narcotic for sure. You know, he was a very hail fellow, well-met sort of country club type guy running these elaborate schemes. And then here he is off at Rehoboth Beach working for $10 an hour as a lifeguard, holding down that job the whole time. So I was fascinated by that character study, absolutely fascinated. And I can absolutely understand why he was swept up into it. I mean, you can't remove culpability from all the others that were involved, even the casino, or the Indian tribes, I should say. That opportunity to access power and wealth by exchanging cash or lavish gifts for legislative favors was like a narcotic to them, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of people that were very involved in the scandal that really didn't suffer the blows that Mike and Jack did. And so in that respect, I have a modicum of sympathy because they were really thrown under the bus as the fall guys for this. But, you know, nothing has changed. 10 more guys have taken their place. They say they're trying to clean it up, but they never will because it's such a gravy train for their re-election campaigns that neither the Democrats nor the Republicans will ever clean it up. That's up to you and I.
You were talking about the Kennedys, and you just worked with Rachel Weisz, who's doing
Jackie. Yeah, I never did work with her.
Oh, you didn't?
But she was on the same film.
Oh.
That's the nature of a Terrence Malick film.
Yeah.
Because our two characters never knew each other existed. I don't know. I don't even know her storyline in the film.
Oh, really? What's your storyline in the film?
I couldn't tell you.
But you're playing Father Barry.
I could partially tell you, but I couldn't tell you what the script is about because I never received a script.
Wait, okay, because we hear it's about a fisherman.
Okay. Well, then you know as much as I do or more.
So wait, what...
I only came in and played my part. That's all I know. That was what was so wonderful about it.
What is your character?
I believe it's not any breach of confidence, because I've read it many times on the internet that Javier Bardem and I play priests, but that's really all that I can tell you.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you know, there's certain obligations that you have. But I'm being absolutely honest with you and saying that I don't know what the story is about. All I know is my involvement, which is a small chapter within the film. So, which to me was absolute joy to work with him on that level because it was so free and so unlike anything I'd ever experienced. I've never been involved in a project where you're not handed a concrete screenplay. But to me it was just like floating down a river. You know, you really had to just go with it or else you just really had to float. Because it was such a free process that if you fought it, you'd just start drowning.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.